When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go! Jets win it! Touchdown, rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it, Allen. Tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece Lightning. 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast. Number 95 for the Jets.
Listen. Thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it is time for midweek news and notes. And so for that, we bring in our friend who covers the Jets and the NFL for Athlon Sports and Pro Football Network, Mr. Nick Faria. Nick, what's up, brother?
Hey, Scott. Great to be back on.
Nick, quite a bit happening, believe it or not. You would think that everything would have tapered off after the draft. And certainly it's not as busy as it was during the peak of free agency and in the lead up to the draft, but there's still plenty of things going on. We should start with the media availability that went down today at Florham Park. Three key players spoke today. We'll start with the leader of the defense, CJ Mosley. What did he have to say?
The big focus for Mosley today was talking about his contract restructuring, if you will, adding two more years to the deal, lowering the cap, and essentially giving the Jets the ammunition to sign some of these free agents that they ended up bringing in. Tyron Smith, we talk about, obviously, these great receivers. This offensive lineman has been completely retooled with Mike Williams as well. This offensive restructuring, if you will, really came ahead simply because C.J. Mosley was willing and able to negotiate a new deal. And the Jets are smart to do it, and Mosley should be commended to do this. He mentioned today when speaking with reporters, he was talking about leadership and sacrifices, and there's many, many different ways to sacrifice for the organization. But I think it's pretty telling overall. This is a 32-year-old linebacker. He's going to be 32 years old by the start of the new season. He's looking for a championship. And when you have a veteran like this looking for a championship, the money isn't the most important thing. And I talked about it today on my show, Football with Faria, where this isn't going to really be a long-standing thing where it shows some of the younger players that you've got to take less money to help the organization succeed. But this is a great step forward because it allows the Jets the flexibility needed to continue to build this overall roster. And they don't have a lot of cap space now, but because Mosley did what he did with his contract, it allowed them to really amp up the roster offensively and get some key role players on the defensive end. This team is stacked right now in terms of talent, and a lot of it is because of Mosley and the sacrifice that he made off the field.
In addition to C.J. Mosley, we heard from his running mate in the defensive backfield at the linebacker position, Quincy Williams. What were the highlights of what he had to say today?
Has to be kind of along the similar lines of Mosley, but Quincy is not happy. He's not happy with the way last season went, and he wants to improve off of his all-pro season from a year ago. And the main piece about improving from an all-pro season where essentially he was one of the top five linebackers in the game, it's reaching the Pro Bowl and all-pro honor. So really getting that double whammy and becoming the best of the best when we think of top linebackers in football. And we talk about Quincy Williams. We talk about a guy who's at the prime of his career, very good athlete, all around the ball, doesn't really miss a lot of tackles from last season. Really, really strong in pass coverage as well. He is always thinking about the next level, and that's because of the leadership of Mosley, really telling him, hey, you're great now. Here's where you need to go to get even better and become an all-time great Jet and also defensive player in the NFL. So he is always about the future, focusing on where this team can improve. They as an organization, seem very, very focused on the task at hand. They know that this is do or die for the front office and coaching staff. And it appears with these first three players that have spoken, they are all in on trying to make sure that they get the job done in the win column this season.
Nick, you mentioned that three players spoke. One of them was Elijah Vera Tucker, who is still recovering from his injury. The Jets did pick up his fifth-year option. Talk a little bit about the Jets picking up that fifth-year option and what Elijah Vera Tucker had to say today.
Yeah, I think it was a no-brainer to pick up his fifth-year option. I understand the injury concerns. He's played in just 12 games in the last two seasons combined. But when he's at the top of his game, he's one of the best tackles in football. And you are banking on a young player like AVT to get healthy throughout his career. So it would have been a mistake, in my opinion, to decline that option and just simply say, hey, we're going to try to negotiate with you if you can stay healthy this season. And then we'll see what happens. Maybe you hit free agency or whatever. The Jets need to start showing the tenacity and the willingness re-sign some of their good players, and they're going to be able to have that opportunity to do that with Sauce Gardner and Michael Carter and Garrett Wilson and all these top guys. But to start, it's got to be with Elijah Vera Tucker, because when he is healthy, and we've seen this the last two seasons, the Jets offense has statistically been very bad both years. But at the beginning of the season, they weren't atrocious. They weren't terrible. I think they were pretty mediocre, average at best, because they were able to run the football very convincingly. And a lot of that was to do with Elijah Vera Tucker, because he was 100%. The minute he went down, both seasons just completely fell apart. So I would venture to say that he is the most important player, non-Aaron Rodgers related, on this offense because of his overall impact on the team. And I think the Jets were right to bring him in and get that fifth-year option done. And with him today, I think the one major takeaway is obviously his recovery. How is it going? Is he expected to be at the start of the regular season? And he was kind of quiet on both of those answers. He had said specifically that his recovery was going well, and he expects to be healthy and ready to go at the start of the season. But he wasn't really saying that he will be ready week one or ready by training camp. So it will be something to watch during OTAs and camp at the beginning, just to see where he's at in his recovery. Because like I said, if this offense, it does not have Elijah Vera Tucker on the field, they are a worse group without him.
Nick, we also heard from Jets general manager Joe Douglas this week, although not at Florham Park during the open media session. Instead, he made the rounds on radio, first with Michael Kay on ESPN, and then with Pat Kerwin on Sirius. Hat tip to my buddy John Grella for filling me in on what Joe Douglas said with Pat Kerwin. Let's go through the highlights of what Joe Douglas had to say during these radio interviews. Talked about Aaron Rodgers and how he's moving around well, slinging the ball like he always has. Talked about his plan for Olufashanu, said that he'll be a left tackle, but he will get practice reps at right tackle and possibly other positions. It sounded more like them possibly looking into what Fashanu could be capable of if they gave him reps at other spots and taking a look, rather than them concrete planning to give him a real shot at either of the guard positions. I still think that Fashanu is best off being left alone at tackle. I don't think he'd be a good fit at guard. We'll see what happens. Look, if he goes into training camp and shows a real aptitude for guard and they decide to give him a chance there, different story. I don't think that's how it's going to go down, but it's possible that could be the way it goes. Douglas, during his interview with Pat Kerwin, said that they didn't want to slide down further than 11, because at 11, they knew that they could still get Fashanu, since Minnesota was coming up to get J.J. McCarthy. If they went beyond that, they weren't sure they were going to be able to get him. As I said on the show on draft night, Douglas more or less said there were six players the Jets were comfortable with because they knew that three quarterbacks were going to go 1-2-3. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that those six players were almost certainly Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, J.C. Latham, Joe Alt, and Olufashanu. And the reason is because Fashanu was the last of those guys available. The Jets did not want to move down and risk losing him. Process of elimination and power of deductive reasoning, that's the conclusion you draw, and that's why Joe Douglas did not want to go past number 11. During his interview with Michael Kay, he refused to say whether or not the Jets tried to trade up for Roma Dunze, but we all know they did. Says he started making calls to pick Malachi Corley in the 40s, and got him at 65, even though he tried multiple times with multiple teams before that. If you've seen the video that's up on the Jets YouTube channel right now, they give you an inside look at what went down during draft night, and you can see some of the footage of Douglas trying to trade up with a bunch of these teams, a lot of them saying they did not want to go all the way back to 72. Douglas got lucky. The two receivers that he mentioned during the footage were Malachi Corley and Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson, his backup plan if he couldn't get Corley, both were still available when the Jets were finally able to make a move up to 65 and get Malachi Corley. Douglas talked about Jordan Travis, said he got better and better and better in college. That's definitely true. Look at where he started out and look at where he ended. One of the most important players in Florida State history. He was the major reason that they were able to turn things around and get into national championship contention. Remember, Florida State would have certainly gone to the college football playoff if Jordan Travis hadn't gotten hurt, and they probably still should have been invited to the college football playoff, but that's another debate for another day. Said that he thinks that Jordan Travis has a variety of different skills, can play on schedule, has quick eyes, compact delivery, accurate on slot feeds. Nathaniel Hackett and Todd Downing visited Jordan Travis in his hometown of Florida and were very impressed after the visit. Douglas said he's still looking to add vets to the roster at certain positions, but quote, "We don't have a lot left in the budget to spend. I've been saying this. It's possible that the Jets could free up a little bit more money by extending DJ Reed, maybe extending Tyler Conklin, and restructuring Quinn and Williams. But as of right now, the money they save from John Franklin Myers is basically tied up in paying the rookies that they just drafted." On the 2024 season, Douglas said, quote, "We understand the pressure. We know what the stakes are." Nick, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. The Jets have on paper a very strong roster, but they have to win. They have had nothing but losing seasons since Joe Douglas has been here. That's got to change this year. I think we all understand that.
Yeah, it really is the case. I said on my show on Monday that this was the second best collection of talent in the AFC right now, arguably a top five unit in the entire NFL. And quite frankly, the only thing that's going to stand in their way are injuries or just inefficient play and poor coaching. This team is ready to win right now. They absolutely should win right now. And I gotta give a hand to the Jets media team, because that's that Flight 24 video, absolutely incredible stuff. Just detailing the ins and outs of what the Jets were thinking on draft night, going through the entire process. The one thing that I think was interesting, and I think not to say that Douglas is wrong for this, because I think the logic was sound, but if he really wanted to move up to 8, and really with the Falcons in general, if the Falcons were really worried about other teams getting to try and draft Michael Penix because they were so high on him to draft him with the 8th overall pick, why not just accumulate an extra selection, move down to 10? You're still going to be able to take Michael Penix, because even if the Bears were to trade out, the team trading in would probably go for J.J. McCarthy. So it was interesting that Douglas was sort of thinking that through and going through the different scenarios. I think the Jets media team is one of the best in the National Football League overall. But a lot of interesting tidbits. Douglas has done a very good job of getting this roster into win now mode. We've got a lot of veterans, a lot of guys that know how to win at a high level. The only question now is, can they do it together? And that's going to come down to Robert Saleh finally trying to figure out a way to get this team into championship contention with a franchise quarterback at his disposal. So one thing that he's been pounding the table for, it's the one thing he has not had. And if he cannot win with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, it sounds like there will be changes, and rightfully so, if they're unable to win in 2024.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Nick, as you said, Jets in win now mode. And unfortunately, one of the downsides of that, a lot of dead cap money, because they had to shuffle some things around, push money into the future. Once all the books are sorted out on the John Franklin Myers trade, the Jets will be at about $52 million in dead money, roughly 20% of their entire cap, and among the league leaders in dead cap space. This is not ideal, but unfortunately, sometimes this is a necessary evil when you're talking about a team that, as you said, is trying to win right now.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing, because I know a lot of people talk about dead cap and it's a big problem and everything else, but I think the one thing that people kind of forget is you can win with a high dead cap charge. You look at the prime example, of course, is Philadelphia, where they traded Carson Wentz away and they took on a $30 million cap hit which at the time was the most of any player in NFL history. It has since ballooned. Minnesota, I believe, is still paying Kirk Cousins a dead cap charge of over $30, $40 million. But you can win with a high dead cap. All it essentially means is the money is still owed to other players, and essentially it comes down to the owner. Is the owner willing to pay, you know, a bunch of money for players to not play for him? And I think the one thing we have seen from Woody Johnson throughout this entire stretch is he is willing to open up checkbook any means necessary to build this Jets team into a winner. We can argue if he did or didn't last season, because the Jets had the second most money in the NFL in terms of roster money given to players, but they didn't go high enough to get a veteran quarterback when Aaron Rodgers went down. But that question is no longer the case for Woody Johnson. He wants to win. He's willing to win now. And when you're willing to win now, it means sometimes taking dead cap charges and paying money to players that aren't on your roster. Kind of like what Steve Cohen of the New York Mets did over the last 2 years with Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. These guys aren't on the team, but he essentially is paying them to play for other teams while they were able to pick up some prospects and also continue to compete at a high level. It's obviously different because the salary cap is there in the NFL, and that's not the case in Major League Baseball, but it always comes back to the owner. If the owner's willing to pay that money, the dead cap, it doesn't always seem like a big deal. I think Philadelphia's dead cap charges right now are close to $30 million overall because they're still paying Javon Hargrave. They're still paying a bunch of other players to not play on their team. So every team, every really good team will certainly have some dead cap charges to them. It's just a matter of the owner is willing to make that payment.
Nick, let's talk about some ex-Jets. We'll start with Zach Wilson. The Broncos officially declined his fifth-year option. Not really a surprise. I don't think there was any question that they weren't going to pick up that option. It would have been close to $20 million. Wilson will enter camp, though, competing against Jarrett Stidham and Bo Nix, who is the 12th overall pick in the draft. We'll see if he starts putting it together under Sean Payton. And if he does, maybe he has a real chance at that starting job. But there was no way they were going to be paying him $20 million this year.
No way. Absolutely. And also Jacksonville declined that option on Mac Jones, which I think is also funny because you got these two quarterbacks drafted very high in their respective rounds, considered future quarterbacks for their franchise. And now other teams are essentially telling them, listen, we're going to hire you. Maybe you'll compete. But after this year, there are no guarantees of if you have a future in the NFL.
If you're Joe Douglas, one of the saving graces of the Zach Wilson pick is that if you look at the other quarterbacks picked right behind him, they all failed so far. Trey Lance hasn't even been able to get on the field. And the 49ers gave up on him, shipped him out after 2 years to Dallas. The aforementioned Mac Jones was dealt to the Jaguars for a sixth-round pick after 3 years, and Justin Fields also moved for effectively a sixth-round pick. There's a chance it could go all the way up to a fourth, but the odds are not great. He'd have to play over 51% of the snaps. After 3 years, the Bears gave up on him and sent him to the Steelers. So that's the one thing you can hang your hat on if you're Joe Douglas. A lot of people will say, well, they could have traded down and drafted other guys, and that's true. But at the time, everybody was itching for a quarterback, and at least you can't say that there was a quarterback that they could have taken that would have been a much better pick because none of those guys turned out to be good so far. Let's talk about one other guy that the Jets picked very high that unfortunately didn't work out for them, Mekhi Becton. We know that the Jets decided to move on from him. They hadn't picked up his fifth-year option last year. That stands in contrast to what happened with Elijah Vera Tucker this year where they did pick up his fifth-year option. Becton had an up-and-down year. He stayed healthy, but he was very shaky. And now he moves on to another situation. The Jets and Becton parted ways. Now he goes to Philadelphia. Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach, one of the best in the league, really liked Mekhi Becton's tape. And look, it's easy to see why. Becton has a lot of ability. You saw what he did in his rookie year before the injuries started. He was very impressive. But then the injuries happened. He was moving around different positions. He was playing banged up part of the year last year, and that didn't help him. And ultimately, it didn't work out here. That's a situation, too, where unlike with Zach Wilson, you could say the guys behind him didn't wind up being successful. That isn't the case with Becton because Tristan Wirfs was picked behind him and has been an all-pro, so you can look at that. But now Becton moves on to Philly. This makes sense to me, Nick. He's good depth for them. He's still pretty young. He's got a lot of potential. And I know the injuries have been there, but it's only up to $5.5 million max. If Lane Johnson gets hurt or Jordan Mailata gets hurt, Becton can slide in there. And if he does well, maybe he's a tackle that they can go forward with into the future as a high-level backup and eventually maybe even take the place of Lane Johnson when Lane Johnson decides to move on and ride off into the sunset. So I think it makes sense for both sides. If Becton's going to get right, it would be under Jeff Stoutland in Philly. And for Philly, if they can find a way to turn him into something, it's a big win at a very cheap price.
Yeah, and listen, it sounds, and I've heard a couple of rumors here that Becton will be cross-trained all over the field, which means he will get some time at guard. And I think that's very interesting because he would be the biggest guard in NFL history to start a game if that's the case. But one of the interesting things that Philadelphia did this past draft season is they knew they had a need along the offensive line, particularly in their depth. You look at Jason Kelce retiring. Lane Johnson said he was going to play only two more years. They don't really have a succession plan. Tyler Steen was taken in the third round last year. And I know they're high on him, but they didn't really address the offensive line a lot in this draft class. They picked up a couple of guys late. And if anyone knows how to work with late round picks, it's Jeff Stoutland. But Philadelphia, it sounded like Becton was always an interesting piece for Stoutland and the offensive line in general. He's big. He's athletic when he's healthy. The problem is he's never really been healthy. So essentially, this is his last chance. This is Becton's last chance to prove that he belongs in the NFL. Because if he can produce at a high level, he could absolutely be the replacement for Lane Johnson. Maybe he works out at guard and works out well for both sides. He becomes team starting right guard for the next 5 years. This one-year deal is going to give both sides flexibility to do whatever they want. But ultimately, this is an easy move to see for both sides. Becton needs a place where he can properly be coached by one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL in recent NFL history. And also Philadelphia needs a swing tackle after the loss of Jack Driscoll in free agency. And they need a solution at right guard. You know, what are they going to do? Is it going to be Tyler Steen? Will it be Becton? All those questions are going to have to be answered eventually. And certainly Becton will help answer those questions as well in the coming months.
Nick Faria covering the Jets and the NFL for Athlon Sports and Pro Football Network. Thanks so much for coming on and breaking down the midweek news and notes with me. Really appreciate it. Don't miss Nick's daily show on Twitter as well, Football with Faria. You can follow him on Twitter. You can read his work. You can watch his videos. You can listen to him here on the show. You're a man of many skills, Nick Faria.
Appreciate it. Listen, all support is appreciated. On Twitter, Nick_Faria 1720, as always. I try to post all my stories there. I'm going to be helping out with Play Like a Jet as well in the future. We've got a couple of great ideas coming as well. So this partnership's going to keep on rolling, Scott.
Looking forward to it, Nick. And I'm looking forward to your next episode of Football with Faria. I love the alliteration. Your wife truly is a genius, Nick. It just rolls right off the tongue. So make sure you watch that show daily on Nick's Twitter feed. Check out everything we're doing at playlikeajet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. Some great all 22 videos up there right now, including film reviews of Olufashanu, Malachi Corley, Braylon Allen, more to come. Watch those videos, subscribe if you haven't already, youtube.com/playlikeajet. Visit our store, teepublic.com, that's teepublic.com, and be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital, playlikeajet.com.